Welcome to the Development Policy Centre podcast. I'm Jonathan Prack. On the 18th and 19th of June, the University of Papua New Guinea, in partnership with the Development Policy Centre, hosted the 2015 PNG update in Port Moresby. You can find more on the update at our website, devpolicy.anu.edu.au. In this podcast, you will find a keynote address from Dr. Glenn Banks, lead author of the 2014 UNDP Human Development Report on Papua New Guinea.
We're going to hear from Dr. Glenn Banks. Glenn is Associate Professor of Development Studies at Massey University in New Zealand. He studied at the University of Canterbury, but he holds a PhD from ANU. So Glenn has worked on issues connected to mining in Papua New Guinea for over 25 years as a researcher and as a consultant to mining companies, to government departments and to international organisations. He's worked alongside UPNG staff and students here on a range of projects over that period. Glenn is published widely on mining and communities in Papua New Guinea and across the Pacific. And at the update this year, he's going to report on work that he has done with UNDP on the Papua New Guinea National Human Development Report. So Glenn's going to address us on the issue of from wealth to well-being, translating resources revenue into sustainable human development. Thank you, Glenn.
Of the 2014 National Human Development Report from UNDP. It's the first human development report that's been put out on Papua New Guinea for about 15 years. So it's a bit like the PNG update. It's one of these things that UNDP want to try and get back into on a much more regular basis than what they have been doing. My name is on the program, but there's some other names that sit behind this, particularly some of the people at UNDP who I work with, and I would particularly like to acknowledge Roy Trevidi, who is the UN resident rep, Jorg Schimmel, who has left the country now, but was one of the key authors of the report, and Devin Maraki, who was involved very closely in the report production process as well. Probably the most important thing on this page is the link that you can go to download a copy of the report. Apparently, I talked to Roy yesterday, and apparently this is the last copy they had in the office. So it's a real popular, it's a bestseller, and you can go to the website to download a copy. They are talking about producing more. The other thing that has come out from it is a sheet that some of you may have picked up out the front, an infographic which talks about the summary findings from the report and particularly some of the policy options that the report has towards the end. What I'll do today is quickly run through a number of a bit of background really to the report, talk a little bit about some of the highlights and lowlights from the report, and then looking forward. One of the things that the report was very strong on doing, it was co-authored by the Department of National Planning and Monitoring, and there was a sense in which we didn't want to give a set of policy recommendations, because the PNG government has been subjected to huge numbers of policy recommendations, and certainly some of the people in planning said we're sick of getting told what we want to do. We would much rather be given a set of policy options. And so that's the way that the report was framed. It was a set of policy options that the PNG government could choose, could consider, could think about, and adopt those that they felt were most relevant. There are, I think, think there are about 35, 40 policy options in the report. I'm not going to talk about them, you'll be pleased to know I'm not going to talk about all of them, but there's three in particular which I have chosen because I think they talk to some of the broader issues around resource wealth and sustainable human development. By way of introduction, and to sort of locate what I'm saying in the context of what was said yesterday and some of the things that Michael talked about earlier, the very first sentence in the Human Development Report says, Papua New Guinea stands at a critical moment in its development. And I think this is reflected in the focus of this particular PNG update, and it certainly came through in some of the language we heard yesterday from the Minister and from Jim and from the Vice-Chancellor as well. So we heard people saying that LNG will shape the development of this country, LNG is a game changer, and we heard from the Minister, and it's reported in the National today, that LNG is a myth. I'm not quite sure how Michael feels about LNG being a myth. I think Oil Search would be quite concerned if LNG is just a myth. We also heard that LNG clouds our vision, and the Minister yesterday was calling for research that shapes Papua New Guinea or provides options for PNG to shape Papua New Guinea for the better. And Jim Adams yesterday made a very strong point that policy choices matter, that decisions need to be made and those decisions do actually matter. And so the rationale behind the Human Development Report was to provide a suite of policy options, those decisions to help inform decision makers, and those decisions do matter. And also made the point that it's important that those decisions are made soon. There's a real window of opportunity now to make some really good decisions for the future of Papua New Guinea. What were we setting out to do for the Human Development Report? Essentially, there were four things as shown up there. First was to look at the existing link, the historical link between extractive industries and human development, particularly in the Papua New Guinea context. Papua New Guinea's been a resource-dependent economy for 40 years, since independence. There's a lot of lessons that can be learned from that 40-year period. Secondly, UNDP, as a global institution, is able to draw on international experience, examples from other countries where they work. And so part of what we were doing was trying to uncover some relevant lessons from other countries that find themselves in a similar situation to Papua New Guinea. A third rationale for the report, and one that we were very strong on, was to highlight some of the innovations in the resources sector that have originated from Papua New Guinea. And I don't think these are often talked about enough. There's some things that have happened here in Papua New Guinea over the last 40 years in terms of the resources sector, which are world-leading, which are cutting-edge. And part of what we do in the report is we highlight some of these, and we say to the international community, hey, there's some fantastic stuff that's happened in Papua New Guinea over the last 40 years. Why don't you think about how this might apply in other parts of the world? And finally, and this is part of why I'm here, is the Human Development Report was seen as a way of stimulating, informing, and working to shift the debate within Papua New Guinea around extractive industries, around the myth of LNG, around policy options for the future, to start to think about a broader range of directions that are possible. So that's what I'll do today, feeds particularly into that last point. When I was first approached by UNDP to get involved in this, I sort of was slightly bemused because I didn't think UNDP actually had a lot to contribute on extractive industries and development. It's not an area that they've worked on very much, as far as I knew. They made the point to me that they are a global and international institution and they can draw on a wide range of country expertise, thematic expertise, and so on. And in 2012, kind of somewhat belatedly, they've woken up to the fact that resources matter, that in a large number of countries in which they're working, the resource dependence of those developing countries had increased quite dramatically, and they realised they needed to know more about it. So over about the last 5 years or so, UNDP has started to assemble a team of experts on extractive industries in development. And in 2012, this came to a head with a global strategy on extractive industries in development that they produced. And again, if you want to follow up on that, there's some really good stuff in there. I'll talk to it briefly a bit later. You can access it through the UNDP website. The third reason why I think UNDP getting involved in this is important is they have a primary thematic focus on human development rather than on economic growth per se. Do I need to move closer? That'll help. Part of what I like about UNDP and part of the reason I got involved was that they don't focus so much on economic growth per se. And we heard a lot yesterday about the economics of development, of the Papua New Guinea economy and so on. UNDP have a broader mandate in the sense that they're more concerned with broad-based, sustainable forms of human development. And that, I think, can contribute something different to the debate that's occurring within Papua New Guinea. And the final rationale, if you like, for UNDP getting involved is they were already engaged with government and the range of other stakeholders on a broad range of parallel and similar sorts of issues. So they have been doing a lot of work on the MDGs, they're doing work on the transition towards the sustainable development goals, and they're involved in projects, programs such as REDD Plus in the forestry sector within Papua New Guinea already. So it kind of makes sense at this particular time for UNDP in Papua New Guinea to focus on extractives. In terms of process, the initial request came to UNDP from the government to produce a human development report. It was pointed out that it had been 15 years since UNDP had done one of these. A steering committee was assembled out of government, out of civil society, the various development partners, UN agencies and industry, and the steering committee guided the direction that the report was to take, the main themes it was to pick up on, and reviewed some of the draft material. Wide-ranging consultations by UNDP staff, by myself, over a 4 or 5 month period, initially a really intense period, and then ongoing consultations with a wide group of parties. We started reviewing the documentation, what's in reports and books and government reports, NGO reports. We ended up with a library of about 400 significant pieces on extractive industries and development in all senses across Papua New Guinea. And then we started getting into global literature, and that just sort of opened up again. And a massive amount of material was synthesized down into the report there. It went through various UN agency peer reviews. I had no idea there were so many different parts of the UN that wanted to have a look at this report and put it out there. We were getting feedback from about 13 different UN agencies, and they were saying different things, of course, but we had to try and make sense of all that. And Department of National Planning and Monitoring also was involved in reviews of various drafts along the way as well. And then final stages, feedback and validation sessions with government, with industry and civil society. Various workshops, presentations, and so on in different forms. So a fairly robust process, I think, has led to the development of this particular report. What did we find? Okay. A lot of the things that were talked about yesterday and again this morning came up as some of our findings. The problems and the solutions around resource dependence are pretty well established internationally. People recognise this notion that a paradox of plenty or a resource curse is something that needs really strong and significant policy decisions to be made about. Human development outcomes are affected by the volatility of commodity prices, and we don't need to look any further than the price of oil and its impact on the discourse around budget here in Papua New Guinea over the last 12 months to recognise that. It's also affected by the quality of institutions and the particular form of resource-based growth. So dependence on gas, for example, produces a range of challenges and issues which is quite different to the challenges that Papua New Guinea have faced in the past being dependent on mineral resources, for example. The figures are fairly astonishing. Since independence, Papua New Guinea, in straight nominal terms, not in value 2015 kina terms, but in nominal terms, 150 billion kinas worth of minerals and petroleum has been exported since 1975. And of that, about 18 billion or 12% has been captured directly by taxes from the PNG government. Now those are pretty big numbers in the context, even in the context of the LNG project itself. And this is before the LNG project actually comes on stream. So, you know, this is historical material. The flip side of that is that the Papua New Guinea Human Development Index has only grown slowly, and many other social indicators have shown either slow improvement, they've been static, or they've been in decline. One of the things we looked for quite closely was to see if there was a link between provinces and districts that were resource-rich and better human development outcomes in those places. And we couldn't find it. Partly we couldn't find data that would support it, but partly what we could find didn't show a strong correlation between a province that has resources and those that have higher levels of human development. And finally, in terms of the findings, we've underlined the point of the update and of the presentations we've heard so far. The current LNG boom offers possibilities and opportunities for equitable and sustained improvements in human development, but it requires decisions to be made. Just in terms of volatility, it's hard to manage economies, and this is internationally recognised, it's hard to manage economies where you get significant volatility in the price of the major exports that a country or an economy is dependent on. This is just gold, you could do the same thing for oil, for copper. Try to think of yourself, your own situation, managing your own household budget. If your income stream varied up and down to that kind of extent, you'd face challenges, wouldn't you? You know, an 80% drop within 2 weeks in your own income, you'd find it tough. It's a challenge, and there are particular policy approaches that need to be taken in that kind of context. I'll just look up very quickly three UNDP, these relate to the infographics that have been made available. This is the way that UNDP tell the story, in a sense, in fairly graphical sorts of terms. There's some interesting numbers, statistics up there. 14% of the world's tuna stocks are swimming around in the waters of Papua New Guinea. The mineral resources make up that figure there of 70%. Last year it's actually higher, it's closer to 85% of exports based around copper, gold, oil, nickel, cobalt, and LNG. And so UNDP framed this very much as a paradox of plenty. Situation where you have abundant natural resources contributing to economic stagnation because capital and labour generate increases in tradable exports, but fail to strengthen knowledge, skills and expertise in citizens. And the potential for conflict is one of the outcomes of this. And finally, the UNDP say, despite some measurable improvements in human development, many indicators, including levels of hardship and inequalities, have shown less positive progress. That's UNDP talk about very poor progress during the last 15 years. And so you can see some of the figures there. the figure that was mentioned yesterday, 40% of the country's population lives on less than $1 a day. And in 2013, the Global Human Development Index, Papua New Guinea ranked 156th out of 187. And the point was also made by UNDP in terms of the other thing they have a particular interest in, the Millennium Development Goals, that Papua New Guinea is unlikely to meet any of the internationally agreed NDGs later this year. Some policy options that we put to them, and these are kind of put in a context that they're put out there for policymakers, for the public to discuss, to generate debate around some of these issues. And the first point we made was that a lot of these are actually pretty clear, pretty globally well understood. The basic principles like you want to extract the maximum value from a sector while allowing investors to achieve returns to ensure that the sector itself is able to be sustained. So get what you can out of it, and that's where a resource rent tax is particularly useful, but make sure you don't kill it by overtaxing it. There's a balance there that Michael and others in the audience know very well. Manage the macroeconomy to reduce the negative effects of the resources boom. Wise use of resource revenues to promote sustainable, broad-based, inclusive growth, human development. One thing that came through fairly clearly is that countries that have done this well have integrated the planning for their operations for these large resource developments into broader national and local planning processes. And that's one of the points that Michael made about the challenges that oil search currently face. And finally, you want to reduce, regulate, and monitor the negative social, economic, and environmental effects of these large-scale developments. And of course, you can't just pick up international lessons and apply them to PNG. They need to actually be appropriate to the context here in Papua New Guinea. The other thing the report does is talks about building on existing successes. Again, one that oil search are involved in is the Papua New Guinea Industry Malaria Initiative, PIMI, which is an industry consortium which is getting together and working with the Department of Health to try and help Papua New Guinea achieve the goal of eliminating malaria by 2015, and one of the goals is Vision 2050. Any Ian students in the audience? Any students from Ian? No. They should be here. There's a significant number here at UPNG who are funded out of something called the Impetus Foundation, Incorporated, a foundation established by the governor of Inga Province, Sir Peter Impetus. And that's a very clear example at a subnational level of a provincial government using resource rents to fund further education for students. One of the things that we discovered when we went out to UNDP and said, give us some international best practice on a whole range of different issues, good case studies that we can use to illustrate different policy options and so on, they came back with 15 of these things. 8 of them were actually from Papua New Guinea. And that is shows that there's a lot that's internationally recognised in terms of practices within the sector here in Papua New Guinea that it has a global impact. And one of them is the way in which women are now being allocated a defined share of resource agreements or benefit streams in the case of the CCMAs around Octavi. There's also some great examples that can be learned from elsewhere, and the report goes into a number of those. Policy options in terms of the UNDP framework that they have developed, they talk about those 4 different areas in legal, institutional and policy frameworks: revenue collection and management, people-centred exploration and extraction, and finally, one of the key ones, investment in human, physical, financial and social capital. And the report breaks down, when you have a flip through it, you'll see we break down the policy recommendations into those areas, and there's, as I said, there's about 35 of them all up under about have 18 different policy issues. The three I want to focus on, one of them concerns mineral ownership. There's, as you all know, there's a lot of debate in the country about mineral ownership and the fact that should it be state ownership, should it be owned by the landowners. And the report says for it to be sustainable, for it to really contribute to reduce conflict, this issue needs to be resolved in some ways. And the report argues that mineral rights must balance the Melanesian understandings and forms of ownership with the global sector, the global mining and extractive sector, need for secure access, for certainty, and for security of tenure. So in other words, it's not just about saying, okay, we want landowners to own the mineral resources. There needs to be a whole institutional structure within which that kind of regime could possibly operate. And that's the big unknown. Bougainville is offering a potential way of thinking about these things. So having a review of the costs and benefits, having a robust debate about the costs and benefits, an informed, robust debate would be important. In terms of grievance mechanisms, the sector here in Papua New Guinea has been subject to a whole raft of conflicts of different kinds. And one of the things that became apparent from international experience is that there are ways in which different grievances can be resolved. And having an independent mining ombudsman, having an independent office for this person, this particular idea of somebody who can dip in and help resolve grievances is internationally seen as best practice. Finally, governance is the third of the key themes that I want to emphasise here, and a number of the policy options really speak to the need for rethinking the way in which governance translates resource rent into sustainable form of human development. One of the things we say in relation to that is use the idea, and people in business school will be well aware of this idea of smart spending, smart governance, and that is specific, measurable, achievable, relevant, and transparent or time-bound spending framework. So looking at rethinking the way in which budget is allocated to give effect to policy frameworks and the LTR accords. And working much more closely on the ground through the development, the district development authorities to ensure the integration of DSIP with corporate money, with donor money, trying to bring all that together under the DDA is going to be a significant challenge in future years. Finally, we said there's all this sort of received wisdom, but think outside the box as well. And we sort of threw a bunch of, not random, but less mainstream ideas into the mix to help generate debate about what are some of the policy options there. Don't think there's only one set of policy options, there's a run-up to them. So, in summary, Papua New Guinea is at a critical moment. Historically, the resource-derived growth has not driven sustained and equitable improvements in human development. That's the reality. That's what we've been hearing the last couple of days. The myth around LNG, as the minister likes to call it, will not magically solve these development challenges, but neither will doing nothing. And this is a key point in the report, is that decisions do need to be made. There are policy options out there. Decisions need to be made on them. Critical decisions and timely action are needed. And that's the key message of the report. Thank you very much.
You have been listening to a podcast from the Development Policy Centre. For more information on our work, visit our website at devpolicy.anu.edu.au. To join the conversation on Australian aid, Papua New Guinea and the Pacific, and global development policy, visit our blog at devpolicy.org. At the blog, you can also sign up to our newsletter for all the latest updates or connect with us on social media. Thanks for listening.